Hello and welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast, a show where we bring you insights from media industry experts to help journalists do their jobs better. I'm your host, Jacob Granger. Today, we'll be talking about how to protect independent news organisations at a time of constant chop and change in the industry. There's a lot of chatter right now about how to support independent news, from charitable status in the UK to news deals with tech platforms. But are those really going to provide long-term sustainability? Here to discuss this with me is Lexi Kirkconnell-Carwana, CEO of the press regulator Impress. Another promising space is news deals between AI companies and publishers, which would provide a new revenue line for newsrooms, remove copyright concerns, and improve AI training models. Three birds, one scone, right? Not exactly. Like all the proposals to support news, Lexi warns us that these avenues need to be carefully considered before chasing the money. More of that to come, so don't go anywhere. Lexi, welcome to the journalism.co.uk podcast. Thanks ever so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you, Jacob, for having me. Very excited to be here.
It seems to me that there's an awful lot happening in the local news sector, not just here in the UK, but abroad right now. And hopefully today we'll explore really how we can protect independent journalism at this moment in time with so much happening. So I'd like to start with something that happened last month here in the UK, where one of Impress's members, Guildford Dragon, gained charitable status, the first UK publisher to do that in this country. What did you make of that? And what are your key takeaways really from that announcement? What did you make of it?
Yeah, it's an excellent development for the Dragon and for journalism broadly, because it represents that philanthropic and charitable cause is completely reconcilable with public interest journalism. The fact that it's taken us this long to get there is just one of those things, but what it represents really is that the purposes of journalism, the functions of journalism, are about addressing public needs, and that the Charity Commission has recognised that and awarded this status as important. But it also goes to the fact that in this country for such a long time now, particularly for small independent publishers, making that case to funders, to audiences, has been an uphill battle. But, you know, one of their challenges now is going to then be going out to philanthropists and saying, you know, will you fund us now that we've been recognised as charitable? Because that case still needs to be made. So the status is excellent. Whether or not the funding then comes in is another thing. And what we've seen for such a long time now is that funders in particular have this nervousness around funding journalism, but also funding it as core service delivery, not just impact projects, not just innovation grants, not just campaigns, but as something that needs continued funding, sustainable funding, so that journalists can get on with what they're doing.
Yeah. So it has been a long road for them. It took them 2.5 years to get to this position, and they also didn't do it alone. I know they got funding from the Public Interest News Foundation to cover their legal fees. They also needed the support of a law firm. And I think it's also worth pointing out, or at least asking, are they quite an exceptional case? Because, I mean, they're entirely volunteer run. They've got an annual turnover of around 7,000 a year, and the average, you know, is about 42,000. So how representative of this is it for the industry, and what sort of a precedent could it really send for the news sector?
Yeah, well, Impress is the benefit. We regulate hundreds of news titles of all different models, from private companies now to charitable functions. And so we see all the different iterations of newsrooms that are out there. Mm-hmm. But the vast majority of them in the long tail are working journalists who are often doing it on a voluntary basis. You know, they may be getting a small amount of income, but they are definitely doing a lot of this labor for free. And again, all of them have this shared common value about providing public interest journalism, doing it ethically, being accountable. And it's very rare within the independent sector to see a model that is viable and sustainable in the long term. So it very much is the case that a lot of the sector could, you know, be recognized in this way. Whether or not they can or they want to and be locked into the dependency of being a charity as well is basically the prerogative of you know, the individual owners and editors.
That's interesting, because what you've said there is it's kind of a permanent move for them. This isn't just a short-term fix. They're now committed to being a charity long-term, and that's something for publishers to think about before going down this road.
Absolutely. And there are restrictions around being a charity, you know, and the Charity Commission will take very seriously complaints about political functions of charities. And that is where some of the independent sector would fall foul of this type of status, this type of recognition, because while a lot of charities have sort of political aims, the over-politicization of charities is something that the commission definitely wants to avoid. So it may not accord with a lot of news publishers' sort of partisan values.
Gaining charitable status for news organizations was, of course, one of the key recommendations of the 2019 Cairn Cross Review into a sustainable future for journalism. And, you know, I spoke to Frances Carecross, the author of that report, when this news emerged. And what she really said from here is that what the industry needs is guidelines, not just on when news can be considered charitable, but what isn't considered charitable. So is that something the industry, or indeed Impress, will be working on from this point forward?
Yeah, I mean, from our perspective, the ability to reconcile partisan politics with ethical public interest journalism is not a difficult one. It's set out in our code. We think it's very straightforward. Making that case to funders of charities, making that case to the Charity Commission is something that, as you said, is a long road, but I don't think is irreconcilable. I think it very much is. And so I think we'll have to start to see case studies as they emerge. You know, if we think about the most political news organizations, whether or not the Charity Commission would be willing to award them status, it remains to be seen. But I think there's a scale, obviously. And, you know, something like the Guildford Dragon, which is a very balanced a news reporter versus something very highly politicized at the other end, is there are lots of means to be tested along there.
So I suppose if there's a bottom line here amongst all of this, I suppose it's that I mean, charitable status, useful as it will be for some news organisations, will not be, you know, appropriate or suitable or viable for all of them. So in that sense, it's not really a panacea. It's not a silver bullet, and it's not going to work for everyone. So although it has the potential not just for the tax relief and opening the doors for philanthropic funding, really, the independent news sector needs to consider more than just charitable status. You know, this is not solved at this point.
No, absolutely. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, over the last 5 years that I've been working in this industry, I've seen all the different types of models that can and can't work, both across the corporate and the independent sector. And where I've seen, you know, the most challenge, the most struggle for publishers are those that get themselves locked into dependencies where they've only got a single source of funding, where they haven't diversified, and then that source of funding is pulled and the whole operation kind of collapses under it. And we've seen it, whether or not you're doing, you know, programmatic and relying on search or social referral, whether or not you're doing, you know, merchandise, events, you know, membership subscription, or charitable in this way. I think it's so important for news publishers to have some diversification so that you can avoid some of that risk, that concentrated risk of being locked into a single dependency when it comes to income. And
right,
figuring out what that format looks like for every individual news publisher based on their audience, based on their mission, is something that collectively the industry could do better at squaring.
So, charitable status will provide new support for the most needy of news organisations as they can step up efforts to source philanthropic funding. But it does not remove the need for a diverse set of revenue streams fueling the operation. The future of local news was the subject of fierce discussion at a UK Select Committee last week, which focused heavily on failing business models, the dominance of big tech platforms, and of course, the arrival of generative AI. And again, we heard a lot of similar chatter about the need for diversified revenue. That's where a lot of big news groups called on the UK government to help facilitate deals between AI companies and news publishers, which would see news content being licensed to train their models. Peter Wright, editor emeritus of the Daily Mail Group, said this would solve two problems at once.
AI is the dog that eats its own tail. And if it develops in the way it looks as though AI developers want it to develop, where they basically just appropriate all our work without any compensation at all. They will destroy the very news content on which their models are trained. And you will end up with generative AI producing answers to users' prompts that are fueled entirely by other generative AI. And inaccuracy and bias will just multiply. Go the other way, protect copyright, make it impossible to train AI unless you have licensing arrangements, and potentially you resolve the great news problem of our time by having a reliable and regular source of income for news publishers. But in order to do that, it's not just a matter of having robust copyright law and enforcing it. The AI developers need to be transparent about what content they're using. They've also got to be transparent about which crawlers they're using and for what purpose. Because at the moment, certainly we, and I suspect everyone else here, is blocking crawlers for OpenAI.
I recognize why news publishers see this as an opportunity and wanting to explore it and wanting to come to the table with some of these AI companies and think about ways they can leverage the value they have for these companies. But I do have a lot of concerns about going into that with a very narrow focus just on revenue, where if we take a step back and look at what these AI companies are trying to do, it could be a case by further integrating journalism and those dependencies into the platform. One of the big questions I have is, are journalists going to be adopting AI, or is AI going to be adopting journalism? And that leading to a further process of publishing journalism obsolescence. Because to the extent that AI is being integrated into these huge, massive companies, and we've got to look at the companies that are developing these products, they're already these large, private, international companies. You know, their goal is to tether users and businesses into their infrastructure. And we know from reporting last week that News Initiative is privately paying journalists to produce content now for them. My view is they're not asking journalists and news companies to produce journalism for them. I'm sure, you know, the content will be useful for training their models in the very short term. You know, it might sound cynical. I believe what these companies want is to be able to track and automate the skills of journalists and acclimatize the AI to those so that they can really cut out the need for journalists and editors to perform that function if AI can do that for them. And so the idea that you can engage in these license deals for original news gathering to support the training of these models, for me, is smacks of short-termism. If we step back and we look at what's actually the end game of these companies, it's to tether people into their environments. They don't want to refer people away from them. And if they can get some short-term gain from journalists and build journalism skills into their system, then in the long term, are we going to need journalists and editors overall? And I see other creative industries really concerned about this. This is, you know, why the actors' unions fell out over the use of AI, because they really see it as AI adopting their skills. And my concern about some of these deals is what's on the table. And again, we've seen what happens when this reliance, these dependencies on search and social really crippled parts of the industry that pivoted towards them as soon as those companies then withdrew their support.
Yeah, I do want to go into the whole search and social comparison for a moment, but as far as the AI companies are concerned, is there a preventative there at all, maybe from a regulation perspective, in terms of not, you know, long-term cutting journalism out the picture and just, you know, really, you know, leveraging it for the short term?
You know, I sit in a privileged position as a regulator where I am always going to advocate for human decision making because therein lies accountability. You know, if, for example, you know, users pivot towards AI news or AI news sources, if the stories become inaccurate, if they're intrusive, if they're discriminatory, then it's people that own the production chain of that. And will the people producing these AI news products take responsibility for any potential harm that follows from them? And my concern about AI and journalism is how accountability isn't being built into design and deployment. And we can end up in a position where it's the responsibility of the user, of the consumer, to navigate bad information. And it's not the owners of the technology taking responsibility for their output and any indirect effects. Irregardless of whether or not it's journalists and editors producing news content or AI producing news content, having that human decision making and having ethics wrapped around it is so important.
Right. So boil that down for me for just a second. When it comes to news deals between AI companies and news publishers, you know, what are the pros and cons there going into that?
The pros really are that we have some human integration into these AI models, that the skills that they're being trained on are very much human-led skills, whether that's storytelling, curation, fact-checking, news sources. And we could end up in a situation where the output is incredibly accurate and well-reasoned and sense-making and informative and entertaining.
Yeah.
The downside being, though, automating all of those skills and then not creating any sort of accountability for what the output is therein could lead to just lots more, a barrage of bad information.
Right.
On the publisher's side, there's obviously a human interest labor story as well. Do we want people telling stories to people, or do we want, or are we prepared to accept AI making news and telling stories for people with humans being cut out of that process?
Just a quick one from me and then we'll get back to the show. Join us on the 22nd of May at our next digital journalism conference, News Rewired, at News UK in London. We've got a day of expert panels and workshops lined up for you, covering the latest in AI, B2B strategies, newsletters, and much, much more. I'll be there and I'd love to see you there too. Head over to newsrewired.com for the full agenda and to grab your place today. So, I mean, it seemed to me that you were saying before that there's shades of social and search with when we're talking about the news deals between generative AI companies and news publishers. I mean, do you think we are running into some of the same dependency issues here by relying on other sectors and companies to prop up journalism?
This is kind of a question about whether or not we can avoid it. And there is a boldness, a little bit of ego around the news industry. Acting like it's a choice one way or the other, where for such a long time, what has been happening, as I've said, is these companies are trying to create these tethered environments for users. And to what extent the news industry participating in that by doing, you know, doing deals with search, doing deals with social, and now doing deals with AI, this is advocating for a more competitive, a more pluralistic landscape where users, they may enjoy their search experience, they may enjoy their social experience, but they should also be directed towards an independent news platform experience as well. And I think what's kind of being lost in the conversation about doing deals with search and social and now AI is whether or not we want to encourage audiences and users to have diverse experiences and have news and information competition, or whether or not we're willing to participate in this further consolidation where they end up with kind of just a single environment where they're getting all of their information and news from.
Mm.
And my feeling is that by news companies entering into licensing deals with AI, it's sort of kind of taking their head out of the ring and saying, we're really happy for audiences to get their journalism, their information, all of their use case experiences from one place. And, you know, we're not going to try and bring them back to our platforms or build alternative platforms where they can get their news and information.
There's a shared presumption when it comes to news deals with big tech platforms and now AI companies that news content is going to benefit the user experience and or the information landscape. Only we saw in recent weeks that once news is deemed of no value to the users, platforms are quite happy and willing to remove their support. Meta last week announced it will be ending news deals from the News Media Bargaining Code, the Australian government's attempt to get Google and Meta to negotiate payments for the news content that lives on their products. Only, that hasn't happened. Independent publications have been excluded from negotiations in favour of the big legacy media companies. Now, platforms are walking away with the code not really achieving what it set out to level the playing field in what has been described as a one-way relationship. So, with news deals with AI companies in the offering, what do we learn from this? Back to Lexi.
It's no surprise that independent publishers have been left out of that picture because they don't have the power and leverage to advocate for their own interests in those frameworks as well. If, for example, in the Australian case, and obviously we've got Digital Markets Act coming into law here in the UK, there is a level playing field that emerges on the other side of that lawmaking. What we hope, obviously, is that independent publishers will be able to go to those bargaining tables because the framework will enable them to do so. But the frameworks have to be designed with their interests in mind in the first place. With Australia, unless that designation takes place, that political designation, which is a political decision, and big tech companies are forced then to negotiate with all publishers on a fair and non-discriminatory basis, you know, that situation is not going to change there.
Yeah. I mean, if we bring this full circle for a second, I mean, the News Media Bargaining Code has a minimum turnover requirement to enter into the negotiations, doesn't it? I think it's about £80,000 annual here in the UK. And that would exclude most independent publishers here in the UK, where the average is, as I said, 42,000, Guildford Dragon being 7. So, you know, if we were to take it lock, stock and barrel as it is, it just wouldn't be fit for purpose for the majority of independent publishers. So my question really is, how do we really change that?
Yeah, and that is work that, you know, we and other infrastructure bodies, trade bodies are trying to do behind the scenes and ensure that we don't end up in that situation. You know, for us, you know, how we classify what a news publisher is in the UK is always going to be a contentious question. You know, we think that, you know, them being ethical and accountable to the public should be a criterion, a requirement for being able to negotiate, for example. But, you know, ensuring that market reach and size and turnover aren't dependencies because of how diverse and plural the independent news media landscape is here in the UK is critical. And again, it's one of those things about what kind of media vision do we have for the UK? Do we want it to be diverse? Do we want it to be plural? Do we want it to be trustworthy? Or, as I said, do we want to create this environment where users only have access to information from a very small set of actors? I mean, that can't be an aspiration we have here in the UK because, you know, there's all sorts of issues that and perverse consequences that spring from that. And so there's sort of two parts of the same question. What type of media vision do we have? What type of media economy do we want? Do we want it to be diverse? Do we want it to be plural, competitive? Or are we funneling ourselves towards and hurtling towards an environment where it's only going to be a few power brokers that determine who can get access to news?
What's really next for Impress then? What's top of mind? What is the real, you know, next steps in the area of your work moving forward?
Well, as I said, you know, for us, our primary mission is ensuring that people have access to trustworthy news, and that it doesn't matter, you know, where that news source is coming from, but we want to have a stake in the relationship between news sources and their audiences. So we're thinking a lot, we're thinking really deeply about how news is changing, how the sources of news are changing, and how we can ensure there are ethics and guardrails wrapped around that. So at the moment, we are looking at how we can expand our offering to people that don't necessarily consider themselves as traditional journalists and editors, but have a newsmaking function. And we want to ensure that we can bring ethics to them. We can bring training and accreditation to them so that they can signal to their audiences that they are engaging in newsmaking ethically. So that's one of our primary work programs at the moment. And there are a couple of distinct ways we're doing that around developing education and training and accreditation products, but also reaching those new publishers and their audiences and letting them know more about what news and ethics really looks like.
Lots of work in the pipeline then, so I hope you keep me in the loop. But as for now, Lexi, thanks ever so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate your time there.
Thanks, Jacob. Lovely to chat to you.
My takeaway for today is that there is a clue in the word independent. Independent publications cannot be dependent on support, be that from governments, tech platforms, or AI companies. Sure, this kind of funding can provide some stopgaps for some exceptional cases, and there is no shortage of promise, potential, and pitfalls in these growing spaces, but independent news must be in control of its own destiny. Now, the harder question is how? How do we do that? And that will be the subject of another discussion to come on this show. How exactly do independent publishers find solutions closer to home to keep their businesses afloat? If you have any thoughts or suggestions, I'd love to hear them. Find me on LinkedIn, Twitter/X@JPGJournalism, or email me on jacob@journalism.co.uk. You can check out all of our episodes on all your usual podcast platforms, Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search and subscribe to the Journalism.co.uk podcast. But that's all we have time for this week. I've been your host, Jacob Granger. Thanks so much for listening. Until next time.